Hey, thanks for downloading the podcast. And remember, if you want to listen live, download the iHeartRadio app, download the TuneIn app, and just search for Fantasy Sports Radio Network, and you can listen to this program live. Also, if you want to watch the video of this podcast, check us out on YouTube, on Twitch, or on Periscope, and type in, you guessed it, Fantasy Sports Network. You'll find us there. Enjoy the show, and thanks for listening.
You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Fantasy Sports Today.
It's going down right here.
Hour number two on FST. Welcome back to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. We're giving away World Series tickets on Fantasy Sports Radio Network this time. It's the winner free DFS baseball contest. The contests are sponsored by DKMS, who are looking for your help in the fight against blood cancer. For many patients, a bone marrow transplant is the best chance for survival, and while 30% of patients can find a matching donor in their families, 70%, nearly 14,000 each year, must rely on a benevolent stranger to step up and donate. You can find out how you can help the cause and win 2018 World Series tickets playing free daily fantasy baseball by going to dailyroto.com/DKMS. That's dailyroto.com/DKMS. Your ticket to the World Series and someone's ticket to life. So thank you for joining us for hour number two. And we're bringing in Brandon Williams. You can find him on Twitter at BCWilliams71. He's a fantasy sports columnist for the Associated Press and for our very own Roto experts. So excited to have you on, Brandon. Thanks for joining us.
Glad to be on, guys. How are Saturday morning working for you so far?
Good. So far, so good. You know, when I was doing some research for this week's show, and we're doing the NFC West today, we're doing our divisional breakdowns. Keep in mind, we're doing an NFC North tomorrow. But an article that sort of spoke to me was an article that you can find in the exclusive Edge package on Roto Experts that you wrote. And I love this sort of thought about not practicing age discrimination with certain guys in fantasy football. And it tied into our NFC West preview because there's a couple of guys on there that I think fantasy owners think they're being wise and getting out a year early on some of these guys. But I've been making a living on Larry Fitzgerald, for example, for the last few seasons. But, you know, we're focusing on the Niners a little bit here. We'll talk about Fitz as well. But Pierre Garçon is another guy. He's 32 years of age, and he went out with a neck injury last year. And it's obviously really scary for any football player, but particularly one that's on the wrong side of 30. But you feel like there is some evidence that Jimmy Garoppolo and Pierre Garçon could work well together this season.
I think there's no question that they can. Garçon has been healthy all spring. He and Garoppolo have worked well together in the offseason. So when you look at the fact that this is a guy who has consistently had over 100 targets throughout the last 7 years of his career prior to last season, you get the sense that he's going to bounce back. I think that when you look at Garçon, this is a guy that's probably going to be drafted as a wide receiver 3, probably as a good flex option in PPR leagues. But I think that he has the potential to be much more this season. I think a lot of people are going to disregard him, but I think the fact that Marquise Goodwin had such a strong finish to 2017, signed the new contract extension, I think a lot of people are going to focus a lot on Goodwin, but at the same time, Garcon's going to be that guy that slips, and I think especially in PPR leagues, he is going to be someone that's going to really pay off. I think that he's going to be a strong value pick going into the season.
Well, Brandon, for any of it to hit, right, it all comes with the success or the failure of Jimmy Garoppolo. We only got a couple of games from him last year, but what we got, it certainly was encouraging. Are you all in on Jimmy G for this upcoming season?
I'm encouraged by what I saw from Garoppolo at the end of last season. You know, the 49ers were 5-0. They averaged more than 30 points per game in their last three. In his last three games, he had 21, 26, and 21 fantasy points. So this is a guy that, you know, to me, they're going to build this offense around. You know, you look at the fact that Kyle Shanahan, had a big factor behind what Matt Ryan did in the Falcons run the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. I can see Garoppolo being someone that, again, will be a value pick. I'm not sure as to whether or not I want to start him on a weekly basis, but I think that he's a guy that if you've got a strong number one quarterback, he's a good guy to play when the matchup's favorable for him or if your number one quarterback is on a bye week. I look at Garoppolo, and I see a guy that's got the potential to throw 25 touchdown passes. He's not going to be much of a runner, but he might sneak in a touchdown or two this season. Yet when I look at Garoppolo, I look at him maybe in that top of the third tier of quarterbacks. And to me, he's someone that has a lot of value. And if that offensive line can stay healthy, Garoppolo to me is going to end up being someone that's going to be a must start by the end of the season.
So they obviously made a couple of additions this offseason, but the one that came with the most ballyhoo was Jerick McKinnon, a guy that was never a full-time starter in Minnesota, obviously a converted quarterback. And he hits the open market. I was listening to somebody yesterday on NFL radio, I think it was. And they said, if you were a member of the Vikings front office and when you drafted him, somebody told you he would be the number one free agent running back in four seasons from now, you would have been scratching your head trying to figure that out. But sure enough, he was. And he lands in San Francisco. I'm a little concerned with where he's being drafted. What are your thoughts on Jerick McKinnon?
I think he's a disaster waiting to happen. I think
I'm with
one
you.
Probably one of the more over. I think he's one of the more overrated backs available. You look at his numbers last season. You know, here's a guy that got extremely rich this off season, despite the fact that he rushed for over 70 yards just once in 2017. That was Week 5 against Chicago. You look at the fact that this guy had went back-to-back weeks in Week 5 and Week 6. He had a combined total of 39 fantasy points. He bounced back Week 8, had 20. But from the bye week on, he only had two games where he was over 10 fantasy points. And that's a major concern. He only averaged 3.8 yards per carry in Minnesota. And I know they had issues with their health with the offensive line. But McKinnon, to me, is not the back I'll go after in San Francisco. I like Matt Breda a lot. I think that he fits the offensive scheme a little more than McKinnon. Now, McKinnon's a far better receiver than Breda, but the fact of the matter is that Breda, to me, is a guy that, is someone that's got a ton of sleeper potential. I don't like where I've seen McKinnon drafted. I think he's more of an RB3 and a flex option more than I would see him as my number two running back. And if you're drafting him with that mindset that, you're going to get, say, 1,500 yards, 9 touchdowns out of McKinnon, you're going to be burnt.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that this offensive line is good. I think McGlinchey could make them really good. They could be a top 10 unit in the league, but they're not one of the top offensive line units. They're not the Cowboys. They're not the Titans. Or even if the Raiders could pull it all together, a unit like that. I just don't see that happening. And you're right with his pass-catching ability, but I'm with you. I'm laying off based on his ADP, and I would rather have Matt Breda because I think Shanahan will find a way to use multiple backs here and spread the ball around. That's why Atlanta was so effective. It wasn't just Devonta Freeman. It was also Tevin Coleman, and it was Julio, and it was you name the tight end of the week, and you name Mohamed Sanu, and a lot of other guys. Taylor Gabriel basically got a nice free agent contract because of what Kyle Shanahan was able to do for him over the previous couple of seasons. So I'm with you. I'm a little bit out on McKinnon. I'll pass it over to Kevin so he can ask you a wide receiver question.
Well, no, I kind of wanted to just piggyback on that and ask you, just in terms of fantasy strategy, Brandon, do you think that it gets dangerous when you're not even drafting the player? I would make the argument that if you draft McKinnon, you are attempting to draft Kyle Shanahan because there's no way anybody was watching Minnesota Vikings games and thought that this guy needs to be a bell cow running back. The situation, I think, has got people excited. So do you think that that's a dangerous thing that people should try to steer clear of trying to draft an offensive guru as opposed to draft the player on the board?
I think that can be foolish. When you look at what Shanahan did in Atlanta, obviously, with Freeman and Coleman, it's easy to fall into the trap that he's going to do the same with McKinnon and Breda. I don't think that's going to be the case. You know, I think that this is a team that's going to have a lot of hands in the cookie jar, for lack of a better term. You look at the fact that, you know, Goodwin and Garcon, you know, they're probably going to be highly targeted. But then after that, who's in the pecking order? You look at Kittle at tight end. Then you look at the fact that, you know, you look at also the fact that Breda's going to be a factor in there. You're going to look at McKinnon that's going to be a factor in there. I don't see where there's going to be this one guy in San Francisco where you're going to look week in and week out and say, this guy needs to be in my lineup.
It's a good point, and it leads me to talking about Marquise Goodwin. Now, if you had to pick a guy, I think you and I are on the same page. I think the ball gets spread around a lot in San Francisco, so relying heavily on Jerick McKinnon could be a mistake unless somehow he got all the goal line touches. I actually don't think they're going to do that, but if he did, that's what would make his value explode. But I can't bet on touchdowns like that going into a draft. So if there is one guy you had to pick to break out, who would it be? It doesn't sound like you think it's McKinnon, but is it Goodwin? Is it Kittle? Who are the guys that you're looking at?
To me, the guy that has interested me during the offseason has been Kendrick Bourne. He finished strong last season. He's probably looking more as the fourth or fifth wide receiver in San Francisco. They've got Trent Taylor. They drafted Dante Pettis in the second round. But Bourne last season finished fairly strong. He had a fair, you know, he had a fairly solid last three or four games where Garoppolo targeted him frequently. But I think that if he can have a strong training camp, he's someone that's going to be a factor in much deeper leagues. To me, if I had to choose a more standard format, I think Breda's going to be the breakout star here. I think that he's going to be a guy. I don't see him being a 1,000-yard rusher, but I think that he's going to be able to get the ball enough to where he's going to end up with about, say, 1,400 yards from scrimmage, and he's going to have the ability to score touchdowns. I don't see where San Francisco has this one guy that's going to be a goal line vulture. You look at the size of McKinnon, he doesn't strike you as someone that's going to be a guy you want to plunge in from 2 or 3 yards out. Breda isn't that guy either. He's also undersized as well. You know, you might want to take a look at maybe how Raheem Mostert or Joe Williams plays into this, because one of those guys could end up being a potential goal line guy. And if that's the case, but Mostert or Williams steps up and has a strong training camp and a strong exhibition season, you're going to see that running back situation become even more muddled, because inside the 20, Breda and McKinnon could become non-factors.
Brandon, then let me just ask you about the tight end situation there with George Kittle. I think a lot of people are excited for him, and they could see a breakout. You mentioned the last three games, they were averaging over 30 points. He gave you 9 points in PPR, 9 points, then 13, then 14. Do you think that Kittle could emerge as one of the top 10 tight ends in fantasy football with Garoppolo for a full season?
I think that there's a lot of sleeper potential in him. You look at the fact that, yeah, he did finish last year strong. He did have 4 catches, 100 yards in week 17. He had a touchdown reception in week 16. So you look at, you know, also the fact that he was very targeted in his last 3 games. He ended up with 14 targets, and he had a nice rate of receptions, you know, up those 14 targets. You know, 14 targets. He ended up catching 13 of them. So, you know, that's a catch rate that any of us will be happy with. I do think Kittle's going to be a guy that's going to end up being a top 10 this season. I like the fact that he and Garoppolo have been on the same page in training, in OTAs. He's a bit bigger now. And I think that if, again, going back to what we just touched on, he could be the guy that ends up being the red zone darling in San Francisco. If they don't have a guy that they feel comfortable getting that ball in on the ground, then I think Kittle and his size is going to allow him to be someone that can end up being a huge goal line guy, kind of similar to what you had a few years ago in Cincinnati when Tyler Eifert was just snatching everything inside the red zone for the Bengals.
Yeah. This is Brandon Williams. He's a fantasy sports columnist for the Associated Press and for Roto Experts. Please go to the rotoexperts.com exclusive edge package. Enter promo code WINNER for a special discount, and you'll be able to see Brandon Williams' article on veteran players and a couple of other pieces as well. You know, to your points about Breida and Kittle, Breida currently the 56th running back going off the board in PPR leagues. I never espouse handcuffing as a dedicated strategy. However, if you get McKinnon, I think it is worth your while to back him up with Breida if you can, and you don't need to spend a lot of draft capital to do it. On the flip side, Kittle, right now, the 12th tight end off the board, so people are seeing some of the value that you talked about.
Yeah, when you look at, you know, handcuffing, I'm a rehabilitated handcuffer. when I look at that situation, the San Francisco situation is probably the one where you want to handcuff. You know, there are a couple of other ones, but, you know, especially in New Orleans, but there's no way you're going to get both Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara unless you're going to draft Ingram a heck of a lot higher than he should be going. But to me, McKinnon and Brady is probably the best handcuff amongst the NFL teams. You look at, you know, the fact that McKinnon has a lot of issues and is very suspect. You look at the fact that Breida knows the system, finished fairly strong at the end of last season. I think you've got to have both of them. So if McKinnon does go down or if McKinnon falters, you've got the backup right there. You know what Breida's capable of in this offense.
Good stuff. So you think the Niners are a playoff team this year?
I don't think that they're a playoff team this year. I think that, you know, they're the hit team this season, kind of similar to what Jacksonville was last year. I think that this is a team that can flirt with 8-8. Their defense does need some work. We do need to see a full season out of Garoppolo before you can say that, you know, he's a franchise caliber quarterback. Yes, the NFC West is weakened this season. You know, you look at Seattle, I'm sure we'll talk about it in a second, Arizona. Also, you know, the Rams, it's the Rams division to lose. And I don't think you're going to get a wild card out of the NFC West this season.
Good stuff. That was Brandon Williams, Associated Press, again, from Roto Experts. Brandon, we'll have you back on in a couple of weeks to talk some more fantasy. Thanks for joining us.
Appreciate it, guys. Looking forward to it.
All right. Have a great weekend. We'll come back. We'll talk more about the Niners and move it over to the Seahawks and Cardinals right after this on FST.
Did you know that you can listen to this show live on the award-winning Fantasy Sports Radio Network? Listen on the iHeartRadio app, the TuneIn Radio app, or download the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network is the only totally free 24/7, 365 Fantasy Sports Network of its kind without a subscription. Check out YouTube Live on the Fantasy Sports Network YouTube page and participate in the programming there, where you can ask questions, discuss the topics with other fantasy enthusiasts, or tell everyone that you disagree. Call into your favorite show and ask your question. The number is 844-84-FNTSY. That's 844-843-6879. The Fantasy Sports Radio Network, your free fantasy source 24 hours a day.
Fantasy Sports Today on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Thanks for joining us here on this Saturday morning. We just talked to Brandon Williams. He's a writer for Roto Experts. He talked a little bit about the Niners. And I have a question for you. I'm going to put this up on Twitter in a minute. Kevin Walsh. Who would you rather have, Jimmy Garoppolo or Jared Goff?
You go away? Wait, was it one versus two?
Yeah, Goff or Garoppolo.
I didn't know if there were going to be more guys. I apologize. I'd take Jimmy Garoppolo. I would take Jimmy Garoppolo. I think that it's more likely that he throws more. Their defense is worse and their running game isn't as strong. So I'll take the volume of Garoppolo. And I think he's, honestly, if you had to ask me, situation not included, who I think would be the more talented quarterback, I would take Garoppolo. So I think his situation, he might not have as exciting weapons, but there's enough there to get it done. Love Kyle Shanahan, and I think he throws the football more. So I just sold you a little bit there. You were leaning Goff, but I just sold you a little
bit. It's a good point. It's a good point. Garoppolo right now, 94th ADP. So you're looking at, end of the seventh round in a 12-team league. And Goff, I'm just going down to him now. It's not much behind that. 107. He's shading towards the ninth round, but still in the eighth round. Ninth pick in the eighth round. So it's just a round difference. And I just wonder. Yeah, I think that's a good point. But that's why I want to put it up on the poll. We'll put it up on Twitter after this next break. So there you go. I think good information there. He has the same concerns about Jerick McKinnon that I have. I will not have McKinnon on many teams this year, if any. I don't even know if I want to put him on my hedge team. I told you there's always a hedge team.
Yeah.
Go against. I don't even know if I want to put him on the hedge team.
Can you give me the first three guys that are ahead of McKinnon right now, ADP-wise?
Yeah, give me a sec. Yeah. I'm on NFFC ADPs right now, non-auction. We got in and going lower here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Not much lower. 13th back off the board. This is, I'm going to make sure this is PPR. Doesn't matter. So in any event, this is all drafts, all jammed together. So McKinnon's 13th. He's right behind Christian McCaffrey, Devontae Freeman, right in front of Joe Mixon and LeSean McCoy. Jeez. How's your question marks? All question marks all over the place. Terrible offensive lines right behind him with Mixon and McCoy. McCoy with obviously a huge moth ball hanging over his head regarding off-field stuff, which has yet to be determined at all. Jordan Howard right behind them. I almost feel better about him than any of those guys. But I absolutely, if I felt like Devontae Freeman and Christian McCaffrey were going to come off the board and I was going to end up with McKinnon, I'd be on that pick. I'd be on it. A little further down, Rashad Penny, Kenyon Drake, Derrick Henry, Darius Geis. It's so funny this year. There's so many question marks in the RB2s. That's why, like, there's a drop-off. It's why when it came to something like Scott Fishbowl, I didn't know if he was going to get back to me. It's like, I'm just taking a running back in the first round because I don't want to deal with having any of these guys. And then I waited. I waited a really long time. The first guy I was ready to pick, again, was Derrick Henry because I didn't want Darius Geis or Kenyon Drake or any of these other guys. I'm worried that Frank Gore might take a whole bunch of Kenyon Drake touches and or Kenyon Drake can't stand up to a full season. But I digress. I ended up taking Deion Lewis, which I feel a little bit better about. I felt like the value was more solid there, and I just picked up a whole bunch of wide receivers. Anyway, so there you go.
You want to talk about question marks? How about Rashad Penny in that Seahawks offensive line? That's a transition, folks.
No kidding. Yeah. So we are going to talk about Rashad Penny in that offensive line. First of all, the one-man show that is Russell Wilson, he continues to be very highly drafted. And I think anybody that watched any football last year and was involved in fantasy in any way was like, this guy is just, he just gets it done every week. He's just out there crushing it. So can he do it again? It seems miraculous that he's able to stay healthy through all this. Mm. And when people say, when there are new mobile QBs coming into the league and they say there's a Russell Wilson type, I'm the first guy to like put your hand up and like slow your roll. A lot of guys have tried to do this. He's the only one. The only one that's done it this well, this consistently. So it's almost like, I hate to make a cross sport comparison, but when people are like, Trae Young could be like Steph Curry, I'm like, no, he can't. There's one guy like that. and it's Steph Curry. So when people say that, I actually have that much respect for Russell Wilson. I get a little weary when people start saying, well, Lamar Jackson could be the next Russell Wilson. I don't really want him to be, because I'm not sure that he can do that. I want him to stand in the pocket and throw the ball all over the place and be deadly accurate. Russell Wilson seems to be the one guy that can really do it. He's a really amazing athlete. I'm not saying Lamar Jackson can't. I just don't really want him to be. I don't want to bet on my QB of the future on whatever team being the next Russell Wilson, because nobody has proven to be that. Whether it was Kaepernick in the past, he didn't do it consistently. Mike Vick, who was one of the greatest athletes in the history of the NFL, he never did it consistently, as eye-popping as his athleticism was. He didn't put it all together consistently. But Russell Wilson has, and I just get weary when people make those comparisons. Anyway, I'm talking about the respect I have for him. He's currently the second quarterback going off the board, so I think that's about accurate.
Well,
I would take Brady in front of him, personally, because of the offensive line issues.
Here's one of the things with Russell Wilson, though, right? He is, at least last year, was like the only option. It was very LeBron James in Cleveland. We know he's their quarterback, right? 34 touchdowns, almost 4,000 yards. Really, really good with the arm. But just look at what he did as a rusher. He led this team in attempts, yards, and touchdowns. He made up over a third of their total rushing yards for the season, and had three of their four rushing touchdowns, which is embarrassing.
Yeah.
And now some of their top receivers are also gone here. Like Paul Richardson's a guy who I've kind of, every time I see his name when I'm on, you know, later in the rounds, I feel like maybe he could do something in Washington. But he was a big part of what they had going there in Seattle. There are guys that have left, and there just doesn't necessarily seem to be these obvious replacements. Jimmy Graham being gone. Is Tyler Lockett still there?
Yes, it's Tyler Lockett. Yeah. The starting receiving core is Baldwin, Marshall, Tyler Lockett. That's your starting receiving core.
I mean, that's not... Is Nick Vinette like your breakout tight end? I mean, Jimmy Graham last year caught 10 touchdowns. Last year, Paul Richardson, 703 yards, 80 targets, 6 touchdowns. That's a good season. That's valuable. And even if that becomes what Tyler Lockett gives you, Lockett still caught 45 balls, 555 yards, and a pair of touchdowns. It is very difficult to know with this Seattle situation, because this is rare. Like, we've seen Rodgers be clearly better than everybody else and elevate people, but you knew there was still talent within some of those guys. This is, I don't necessarily off the top of my head have a better analogy than this is LeBron James 07 Cavs-esque. That's what this feels like. Doug Baldwin's great. So maybe it's this version of the Cavs. Maybe Doug Baldwin can be Kevin Love. The offensive line is the worst in football. Maybe second worst if the Texans don't figure it out. The receiving core, if you include tight end as well in that, is not encouraging. And some people really like Rashad Penny. Well, that's fine. Is he really going to come in and save the day? I refuse to bank on that. Refuse to.
I cannot take guys with really problematic offensive lines like that. I'm usually going to fade those guys. Right now, he's going basically last pick of the third round is where his ADP is from the report I'm looking at on NFFC. That makes him the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16th running back, give or take. So that's mid-range RB2, which makes sense because people think he's going to be a bell cow, but I just get worried about how ineffective it is. When the Rams had offensive line issues 2 years ago, Gurley got the ball a lot, but people got frustrated by it. The offensive line improved, and they were off and running. I just wonder if Penny could be looking at something like that. And in his rookie season, you just wonder, can he get banged up? Does Chris Carson have value? That's what you start to think about. I think that's another situation. You know, the Niners are one, and I think Seattle's another situation where, like I said, I don't espouse having to have a handcuff, because there's other guys that you can get later in the draft that don't have to be a handcuff that could extract as much value out of it. Do you know what I mean? Like, guys getting drafted around Matt Breida could conceivably have as much value as Matt Breida. I would also say with Chris Carson. But this is one where you have to take a look at it. If you're going to take Rashad Penny, you have to consider Chris Carson as a handcuff here to make sure you're safe and you're at least getting some carries. He is a rookie. It isn't a great offensive line.
A terrible offensive line.
For that to come together. Yeah. Yeah.
Like that, one of the things I was talking to George about the other week with the whole Sean McCoy thing, just in terms of Chris Ivory's value. And it's like, man, there's a lot of opportunities that free up, as I'm sure where people will turn their attention. But it's like, do you want those opportunities? Look at the situation in Buffalo. Quarterback is terrible. Receiving core is terrible. Offensive line is terrible. Like, is this a situation that, okay, yeah, I want that. Like, Rashad Penny, I understand, take him. He is slated to be a team's lead running back, maybe even a three-down running back. Of course you take Rashad Penny. How high, though? Like, you're drafting into a horrible situation. And then, how much do you worry about a handcuff in Chris Carson when he will then replace Penny in a horrible situation? These guys are going to have to be special to make the most out of this. Russell Wilson is special.
Yeah.
That's why he's quarterback two, quarterback three off the board. I don't know about Penny or Chris Carson or Tyler Lockett.
You know what's interesting is as you get lower in like these running backs that are being drafted as like the 50th plus running backs off the board, these are all handcuff scenarios. You see guys like Gio Bernard is criminally underdrafted every year, and he had as many points as Joe Mixon did last year. So he's being drafted really late. But other guys you see, Latavius Murray, that's Cook's handcuff. Austin Eckler, that is Gordon's handcuff. Matt Breida, McKinnon's handcuff. You got Doug Martin in there, Bilal Powell, Chris Carson. A lot of guys that you see are handcuffs that are going pretty late. People still utilize them on some level. It can be your 14th, 15th, 16th draft pick in your 12-team leagues. There's still some value there, maybe even a little bit earlier. You just got to make sure you're paying attention to ADPs before you go into your draft. So, yeah, obviously big question marks there. I mentioned the receiving core. Baldwin is the one with real value there. I'm going to check to see where he's coming off the board in drafts. But I've always been an unabashed Doug Baldwin fan. It hasn't stopped, and I'll continue to draft him whenever I can get him. He and Wilson have been on the same page for a good amount of time now, and I think he's an excellent receiver. I just think
Doug
is going 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, top 11 right now, 28th guy off the board. So you're looking at middle of the third round.
My computer is betraying me right now. It's being very slow. Can you tell me where Doug Baldwin landed last year amongst target leaders? I know he finished with 117. I have that in front of me. But where he finished amongst target leaders? Because I want to then pose the question of, can he lead the league in targets, or maybe is he top five in the league in targets? Because the gap between Doug Baldwin and the next best guy is considerable. I mean, it was considerable last year, and that reflected, had 30-plus more targets, almost 40 more targets than the next closest guy. So I'm curious of where he landed last year and how much of a jump you could see.
I'm only doing wide receiver targets at the moment. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. I think 16. Right behind Devontae Adams and Alshon Jeffrey, right in front of Brandon Cooks and Robbie Anderson.
Okay, so does Doug Baldwin right now look like a guy that has, again, we don't have him right, but he looks like he could be a top five targets guy in football next year. That's valuable.
Five would be aggressive because
is it,
you have
though?
To consider the overall, yes, for this reason. You have to consider the overall success of the offense. Last year, they were 11th in points scored. They got into some shootouts, 15th in yards, average drive, 30th in time and plays, and 20th in points. So they're not efficient. Obviously, we talked about the offensive line issues. They had a problem sustaining drives. I'm just looking at some of the point totals. They threw up 46 on the Colts. They threw up 41 on the Texans. They got, you know, they got into some shootouts. They did. A lot of 20-point.
They're going to have to throw the ball. Russell Wilson's going to be top three in attempts. No?
No, I don't think they'll be efficient enough. I know what you're saying. You're saying they're going to be trailing a bunch, but I'm telling you that they won't be efficient enough for him to throw the ball that many times, and or for for Baldwin to have that many targets, because you got guys in front of him like Hopkins, Fitzgerald, Antonio Brown, Landry, Keenan Allen, Julio Jones, Michael Thomas, A.J. Green, Adam Thielen. Those guys are all going to have more targets than him. Can he get into the bottom range there? He sees 20 more targets? Maybe, but they utilize him a lot in the offense as it is. He's got a pretty heavy market share now. I think what they're going to try and do is run the ball as best as they can. If it's a total failure, then they're going to punt it after September, and then he starts throwing it all over the place. I still don't think Baldwin gets to the top five or Wilson gets to the top three in attempts. The offense won't be good enough overall for that to happen, and that those go hand in hand. When you see the top attempts, like Tom Brady led the league in attempts last year, they could kind of run the ball too. They just were so good that they sustained drives, and he played a ball control passing offense and murdered every team that stood in his path. So
we'll
come back after. Let's come back.
Yeah, yeah. We'll
do the Cardinals. Go ahead.
I want to make a quick request. I don't know if it's possible. I want to see if we can get the King at some point during hour number three.
We'll work on that. We'll see if we can get it. It's a good point. We'll come back after this. We'll see if we can get Scott Engel to talk about the Seahawks after this.
Have you ever wanted to have a fantasy expert in the palm of your hand? Or better yet, in the pocket of your khakis? Well, check it out. Now you can. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Download it now to your phone. We promise no weird viruses, no strange tracking things, just 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of pure fantasy knowledge dropping all over your head. It's the Fantasy Sports Radio Network app. Stop being a weirdo and streaming it online. Get it on your phone. Take it with you everywhere you go.
Back on FST as we head towards hour number three, closing out hour number two. We're going to see if we can get Scott Engel on the phone. Last minute thing, we put a poll up on Twitter. So go to @FNTSY Radio. And we asked a question: who would you rather have this fantasy season, Jared Goff with an ADP of 107 or Jimmy Garoppolo with an ADP of 94? To me, it's closer than people say. But I think Kevin has a pretty interesting point about the volume of passing. Only because, you know, I'm going to pull it up from last year. Pass attempts. I'll give you a sense of what everybody's passing attempts were. I just want to see where Goff ranked. Yeah, pretty low. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18th. Threw the ball 477 times. He did not play in week 16, but you know, in general, I think it's fair to say that the Seahawks pass attempts last year, they were 16th in the league, right down the middle. And second in touchdowns. He threw 34 touchdowns last year. Amazing. It's amazing. He's amazing. I don't think people appreciate him enough. And then the Rams pass attempts, they were second. Is that right? Did I go to the wrong thing? No, I did go to the wrong thing. The Niners were second. That's what I was trying to do. The Niners were second. I was trying to compare Garoppolo and Goff. I did the wrong thing. Mm. The Niners were second in pass attempts last year. But that was because they were getting killed early. I shouldn't say that. They weren't getting blown out, but they were down a lot. You know, they were 0-9, you have to remember, back, and then they finally beat the Giants and then went on a six-game, you know, after that, another five-game winning streak. But they were throwing a lot to stay in the games. You know, they lost games to the Rams 41-39, to the Colts 26-23, Washington 26-24, and then they hit a skid and then traded for Garoppolo, obviously, and he came out of the bye week, and they got the job done. But I was trying to compare the Niners, who threw the second most passes last year, to the Rams, who threw the 24th most. So the Rams could just stay right in that sweet spot, right? Like, why? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. It was a really efficient offense. in general. They scored the most points in the league despite the 24th most passing attempts and the ninth most rushing attempts. You know, they played the field position game and they played defense, and I think they made them a very efficient offense. So
I do think Goff's numbers should go up just from him entering year three. He should be better. And you don't want Gurley to be 350 attempts every year, right? Like, I mean, maybe, I don't know. That just, you got to be careful with it.
Yeah. I don't think they're going to be careful with it this year. Steelers weren't careful leaving him second with Le'Veon Bell.
That's because they have no interest in him staying there past the franchise tag.
You know what? I don't want to get into this right now because I'm getting super angry about it. We'll save that for hour number three. I got to talk about the Cardinals. And by the way, I did not think Le'Veon Bell was going to be on the team this year. If you ask, when people asked me last offseason and all that kind of stuff, I just thought they were going to kind of move on. I thought this, I thought 2017 was his last year as a Steeler. And 2018 is going to be. It's a bummer. I think it's really curious. Initially, I thought he might hold out. Now, I don't see how it behooves him. He's just really kind of losing money to do it that way. And he said he'd be back. So I have to take him at his word. So let's move on to the Cardinals because we don't have so the Cardinals. So give me your thoughts first on the Sam Bradford, Josh Rosen thing. When does Josh Rosen come in? Because I think you and I tried to guess this in a previous week.
Well, yeah, I think, though, I really might view this differently than a lot of people. I do not think that Josh Rosen can beat Sam Bradford out for this job. I say that while feeling like Josh Rosen is the best quarterback in this class. It has nothing to do with Rosen and everything to do with the talent of Sam Bradford. Sam Bradford, if you told me he was going to play 16 games, I'd likely make the argument that he was a top half of the league quarterback. He has that talent. We've seen it. It's the health. So that's where the problem comes in with this type of projection, because I could make the argument that we don't see Rosen this year. But you can easily make that very same argument that you will see him week one because Bradford doesn't make it out of the preseason. There is an interesting note within their schedule, again, put together by Warren Sharp, that they're going to face a lot of difficult pass rush defenses, which obviously does not fare well for the longevity and health of Sam Bradford. So that's why I struggle with the prediction, because a lot of times if you go through schedule, you say, okay, they're starting to lose here. Well, boom, you go out of the bye week. I think all of that is kind of out of play here. And it really just comes down to, when is Sam Bradford going to need to go to the bench because of health and not performance?
Yeah, so here's the schedule. Washington, then at LA, good times. Chicago Bears, Seahawks, at the Niners, at the Vikings. Eh, that's not great.
They are rated to have the most difficult schedule in football by those rankings,
which is why Vegas is off them so much. Niners at Chiefs, Raiders at Chargers, at Packers, Lions at Falcons, Rams. Yeah, I mean, they got five or six hitters in there, you know. Von Miller's going to be breathing down his neck in week seven, the week after that the entire Minnesota Vikings defense will be camped out in the backfield for the entirety of the three-hour game. So they do have – so, yeah, that's rough. They're going to face some really serious pass rushes. And the questions surrounding this offensive line for yet another year are going to really be right in their face. Currently expected to have one of the worst offensive lines in the league. I've broken it down in the past. They signed Justin Pugh from the Giants, but he didn't even grade out particularly well last year. Andre Smith is a retread at right tackle. Mike Iupati, who was at one point one of the best guards in the entire league, has just been sieged by injuries and is just kind of hanging in there. And then TJ Humphries at left tackle, who's their best lineman, at least as far as last year was concerned. So it's why I have some hesitance about David Johnson being a top back. I know how talented he is, and I know the kind of volume that he's going to see, but it's why I push him behind Kamara, for example, and Bell and Gurley. I don't have him way down my list. I'd take him over Saquon Barkley, but probably not Zeke Elliott. You know what I mean? So I have him fifth instead of third.
No, I don't.
So I don't think that's egregious. He still has a first round pick.
Look, I mean, of course, right? Like when it comes to these top guys, it can become splitting hairs. I don't know why it bothers me the way it does, but for some reason I was very bothered that Gurley last year was MVP and David Johnson literally the year before that had a better season and like couldn't even get offensive player of the year consideration. Like nobody was talking about it.
Because you get fired up over award stuff and it's just it doesn't matter.
No, but it's not even about award stuff. It's about appreciating talent though. That's why he
people
didn't have to
David
win
Johnson.
The award. It's more than that though. To me, I think that Johnson and Bell are actually on a tier of their own. For me, they're on a tier of their own, and I don't worry about the situation at all with David Johnson. I think that he is going to be fantastic. I worry though about a whole Arizona because right now they're having to deal with
coaching change. I could make the argument that it could be Todd Gurley from 2 years ago. Yes, and the coaching change does matter.
Oh, no, it does. It does.
Coach in there now.
It absolutely. The coaching change matters. And another part of this as well, you know, and it can be difficult to figure out where this will impact, but their GM is currently serving a suspension for an extreme DUI. When you're going through these type of changes, you want to try to be buttoned up. And that's not what they are right now in Arizona. They're going through a lot of different changes, and to not have your GM in the building for something like this is very difficult. So that's why I think that can be tough. I will say, because I actually like their quarterback situation more than most, and Landry Fitz is still fantastic, and I think that Christian Kirk could have a good season, and because I believe that David Johnson is the best running back in football, if that offensive line that you just listed there, a lot of the names, they have something in common where last season they weren't that great, but we've seen them be really, really good. If they find that form, this offensive line could go from, say, the 27th to a top half of the league offensive line. But those are question marks that it's hard to buy into. The defense, again, how much trust can you put in? Chandler Jones last year, sneaky, led the league in all of sack. I'm starving.
Yeah,
in all of sacks.
That was James Snacks Harrison.
Yeah, right.
Snacks Harrison always leads the league in snacks.
God bless him. You know, I mean, they still have Patrick Peterson back there. I think this is a roster with talent. The question marks a lot for me comes from how much can I trust this offensive line to get back to form. How long can Sam Bradford stay healthy? And how much does the coaching change hurt this football team?
Yeah, I'm way more concerned about the offense than I am about the defense. I think the defense could still be really good. I mean, it's not old defense. They got Buda Baker is their starting strong safety, and Hassan Reddick is their starting strong side linebacker. Some people felt like he was miscast a little bit last year, and they're trying to rectify that. But nonetheless, they have drafted behind some of these more veteran guys to try to improve this team. You just would get worried about them being on the field a little bit too much. Even the best of defenses, if they're on the field too much, can suffer a little bit in terms of how well they're able to play. But anyway, so we got David Johnson there. Right now you're seeing Sam Bradford drafted as the 31st QB off the board, so that's really only in super deep leagues like Scott Fishbowl or in two QB leagues. You'll see Sam Bradford and Josh Rosen have drafting value. In dynasty leagues, you could argue five different ways on the quarterback that you would want. If I were drafting in dynasty leagues at these rookie quarterbacks, I would have Darnold first, personally. I just think he could be the longest-term success, but I would have Rosen probably behind him. I have doubts about Baker and who his coach is going to be a year from now or 2 years from now. And Lamar Jackson again, there could be a coaching change there. Not that I think they should make a coaching change, but if they miss the playoffs for a fourth year in a row, John Harbaugh is going to be on a seriously hot seat. Even though he's a good coach, I don't think they've supported him well enough with talent acquisition, and they've been besieged by injuries. One of the most injured teams in the league. It's a bit of an anomaly that just happens to certain franchises, and it's happened to them for the last four seasons. That's where I'm at on the QBs. We said David Johnson. Let's move over to the wide receivers because we still got Larry Fitzgerald there to talk about. And you said Christian Kirk, but really, do you feel good about anybody's value past Larry Fitzgerald?
Well, Christian Kirk's going undrafted, right? So I feel like I can scoop that up. I think that he's going to have a role in this offense. I think he very well could be their second option. And I definitely think that he is going to have a bit of a rapport build up with Rosen. I'm just anticipating that. And as I said, I don't know when Rosen plays. He might not play, might play week one, but I do think that that's valuable. So, again, he goes undrafted, so maybe you don't have to. But if you don't like anybody on the board with your very last pick, then go for it.
Yeah, right now, in PPR leagues, Larry Fitzgerald, missing him here. Give me a second. Fitz is, there you go, 12th. So, I like it. He sees so many targets. I think he will here. This team could be trailing at times because of their inability to sustain drives. But, look, I'm never going to be down on Fitzgerald. I haven't quit on him yet, and I won't. I think Fitz is just one of the greatest wide receivers who's ever lived. I think sometimes he's underappreciated in that regard. And last year, he saw the second most targets in the entire league. Only DeAndre Hopkins with 175 beat Larry Fitzgerald's 162. And only one player had more receptions than Larry Fitzgerald last year. That was Jarvis Landry. Like I said, I've been cleaning up. It's harder to do now because he's back to being a wide receiver one. But last year before, and the year before, I was just making a living on drafting Larry Fitzgerald, picking up my catches year over year. So I have no issues about people drafting him as a wide receiver one. He's going around guys like Amari Cooper, Stephon Diggs, Josh Gordon, Allen Robinson. You see him around guys like that. That's on the NFFC. This is a little bit better for most redraft leagues, NFFC. Sometimes you see, you know, it's high stakes, so guys are taking some wilder chances, and they might think Larry Fitzgerald to be a little bit too safe, and maybe his catches come down to, you know, maybe he regresses a little bit because the offense isn't so good. So, here's who he's going around. Behind Mike Evans and Adam Thielen, in front of T.Y. Hilton and Stephon Diggs.
That Vikings thing is so weird to me. Because they just burst it on like that. But you trust Larry Fitz, right? I mean, you mentioned it. 160-plus targets. Second in the league in catches. Like, there's nothing to suggest that that's going to change. There's no overpowering tight end talent there that's going to be stripping it away from him. And there's nothing in the way of a wide receiver, too. It really is David Johnson coming back, which will impact him. It's not going to be 160 targets again. It won't be. Because David Johnson's going to be second in this team in targets. Will impact it. But there's still a ton of value here with Larry Fitzgerald because he has, I mean, there's nothing to suggest that he has lost it. He is fantastic. I wanted to just ask you quickly because I think you'll know this better than I would. With Steve Wilks there, comes over with a defensive background the year before, which is the assistant head coach, defensive coordinator in Carolina. So Mike McCoy very well could kind of get the Wade Phillips role of just you handle the offense because he's also a former head coach. Yep. The outlook on a Mike McCoy offense, is that something you want a part of or not?
It was until it fell apart in Denver last year, and they fired him in the middle of the year. It was a very odd thing. I thought he was going to be very successful in helping those young quarterbacks, and it just didn't work out. I actually think that Denver roster is weaker than they think it is, and I think it just didn't work out. But I'm not punting on Mike McCoy. I do think he's a good guy to have in there with Josh Rosen, and I think he could get them back to where they need to be if the offensive line wasn't such an issue. At some point I like them as a long shot, but the more I look at this team, the more I think they have no shot to make the playoffs. Just none. And Vegas is right there with me. So we'll come back. We're going to Josh Eberle to talk NBA right after this. It's Mike and Kevin on FST. Join us for hour number three right after this.